Hello, hello. How's that? But I'm going to be singing, so I have to know that it works for that. Sounds okay. Okay. And how about this? Is it on? There we go. Sounds good. Okay, thank you. Hello, everyone. Very happy, honored to be here with you tonight. I love James and was really pleased when he asked me to come tonight. So thanks for being here. I've always wanted to come to his sangha. And so I usually have my godson that I take care of on Thursday nights, which doesn't allow me to do it. So I was able to arrange things tonight so that I could come. And so nice to know that you're all meeting here. I live not far away in the neighborhood. So there's something really heartening about thinking of people coming and practicing together, knowing that they're nearby, even if you're not there. It's just, I guess that in some ways that is the ancient tradition, right, of that practitioners hold for the community. We hold it for each other. And in a way, we take turns on the zafu. We take turns teaching, I think, in our own lives and in this context as well. So tonight I get to sit here, and tomorrow you'll sit here in your own way. So really great to be here with you. I'm going to spend the time, since I am primarily identified as a musician who weaves kind of Dharma wisdom teachings from various traditions with my music, and so I'm going to create a bit of a mix of things, a gumbo tonight, of some chants and songs, and interweave some thoughts, some reflections. So that means that we're all yawning, and it's almost time for bed, so we can... Something great about chanting, because there's an energy in it, you know, that can help wake us up. And so I want to start with a couple just simple mantras, chants. See if I can make it work here with the guitar and the mic. And we'll also weave a little bit of silence, because there's something really precious about the silence that we discover when we stop chanting. It takes on a very different quality. So let's just begin with this Tibetan mantra that's very well known in that tradition. Just three sounds: Om, Ah, Hum. And for those of you who came and didn't know that we were going to be singing or chanting tonight and didn't know that that was part of Buddhist tradition, I can assure you that it is. And certainly if you went to Asia, most of us know, of course, that in Tibetan Buddhism there's a lot of singing, and there's overtone chanting. It's an art, you know, it's a big part of practice. And in Southeast Asia, if you go to any of the monasteries, and certainly in the Zen tradition in China, there's a lot of chanting and singing. When Theravadan Buddhism came to this country, to the West, and Vipassana practice, early on, there was no chanting at the retreats if you were doing those early retreats. And it was left out for various reasons. But now there's a bringing of it back, and I know that James is singing with you regularly. So rest assured, this is part of your Dharmic practice, belongs here. So the Om Ah Hum is said to purify thoughts, words, and action. Thoughts, speech, and action. And to kind of transform it into, or infuse it with qualities of compassion. So we just sing it as one note, and then you can feel free to sing off harmonies if you like. Just Om Ah Hum. You know what? Actually, I'm going to use this.
Om Mah.
feeling the resonance of the chant, the vibration that you've created in your own body, and allowing it to bring you more fully into your body, into the experience of being here. I love this space. And one of the head monks here, Reverend Hung Shor, is a lover of Kuan Yin, of which there are many images of. She's here and up here, and giant one right back there. She's in the lineage of Avalokiteshvara, the bodhisattva of compassion, originated in India, and then when Buddhism moved to Asia, Southeast Asia and China, these other figures emerged, like Kuan Yin, and she's Kwan Se in Korea, Kanon in Japan. You see her all throughout Asia. If you go to fly into the Koh Samui Airport in Thailand, there's like a megalithic Kuan Yin there. See her when you're flying in. And it's really this image, often androgynous, represents the one who has dedicated their lives to help ease the world's suffering. So she's often described as the one with 10,000 arms, 10,000 eyes. So let's just do this simple line, evoking that quality in ourselves. Especially it's responding, this kind of feeling, this dedication, is in response to looking at the world with eyes and heart wide open, and it's sort of a natural response to want to help. It also comes out of the deep dharmic realization of the interbeingness of everything, the interconnected nature of everything, so that you realize that as long as one other being is suffering, you can't fully be, you really can't ignore it, because we're all part of this one great body. Evoking this quality of the bodhisattva of compassion within us. She who hears the cries of the world. Try that. She who hears the cries of the world. Of the world, she who hears the cries of the sheep, who hears the cries of the sheep, who hears the cries of the world. The she who hears the cries of the world. Who hears the cries I was pondering what to focus on tonight to talk about. And I was remembering the first retreat I went on when I was 24. I think it was an Occidental. It was a 10-day retreat. For some reason, I accidentally ended up in the front row of all the people sitting, and all the beginners were supposed to sit in the back row. And it was a very strenuous Rambo kind of training. Yeah. We were to sit for 2 hours at some point without moving an inch. And it's very intense, kind of amazing. But it really appealed to my type A personality. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get awakened. And there was such an efforting. I exhausted myself. Ajahn Shanti talks about, if you know his teachings, about sort of the exhaustion that you kind of exhaust yourself until you finally give it up. It's kind of the paradoxical nature of practice sometimes. And I just thought I was going to just through this will, this effort, find happiness. And I practiced like that for quite a long time. It's a lot of effort, and really it took getting older, and it took certain teachers to start to see into what I was doing and to start to get a sense of, sort of almost sense this balance between efforting, which is part of it, that you have to be awake and have an intention, right, when you practice, but really letting go of trying to get anywhere. And if you go on a retreat sometimes and you come out of your busy life and you start a walking meditation, maybe you're all in a line and you just want the person in front of you to get moving, you know, like, let's get there. And then by like day three, you've settled down and you realize really there is nowhere to get. And it's such a relief when you realize that really you don't have to pass the person in front of you. It's just, you start to really just enjoy walking. But it takes a kind of effort. It's a funny thing. It takes an effort to reach a space of non-efforting, I guess you could say. There's so many ways to talk about this, but it's really just sort of pointing to it. And so I've been very drawn in the last couple of years to sort of trying to practice ease and deep relaxation. A friend of mine often quotes, I can't remember the source of it, this wonderful teaching that says, enlightenment is the deepest form of relaxation. And this capacity to just kind of stop the trying. And I was thinking about that and also about this time of year and the coming of summer. And always at this time of year, for some reason, I start to be drawn to the work of Walt Whitman and the great and mystical poets. And the, you know, the Walt Whitmans, the John Muirs, the Mary Olivers of this world understood something about beingness and stopping. They went into the woods and they weren't really categorizing things. They weren't measuring things really. They were just stopping and watching and wandering. That wandering that was so few of us tend to do anymore. I think it's a great art, the art of wandering with no destination in mind. So I wanted to focus on that tonight and invite sort of the chants and the songs as a way into that space. That maybe just for the last, what do we have, 35 minutes, we could see what it's like to invite in a kind of intention, a light intention, to not have to get anywhere, to not have to be anybody, to not have to fix anything, and to just be able to rest in the ease of our own being. So I want to do this, the chant that they say is the chant that is the most often chanted mantra in the world. There's somebody out there counting. I think the reason they say that is because this mantra is the mantra that you see on prayer wheels, prayer flags all over the world. In Pali, in Tibetan tradition, they pronounce this mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. Hail to the jewel in the lotus. And we hear that and go, okay. And one of the interpretations of that I've heard is that what this mantra is pointing to is this teaching that we don't have to manufacture anything to experience kind of an awakened mind. That the process is actually just allowing things to fall away. That it's not about getting somewhere or manufacturing something. It's actually a process of elimination, of letting things fall away kind of naturally. And then the teaching is what naturally arises then is our own true natures. So it's more like creating the conditions to allow that to happen. And it just feels like such an optimistic teaching to me. The teaching really says that all of us ultimately at the core have this this mind and heart of great compassion, luminosity, and ultimately love, really. And so Om Mani Padme Hum is a mantra to help us remember that. You know, that wonderful Buddhist teaching where the Buddha says, they ask the Buddha, you know, who are you, a god, or are you man? And he says, I'm awake. So this is the mantra for like waking up. It's like the Rumi poem that says, you know, don't go back to sleep. And it's the waking up to that sense of just the natural sense of our own being when the other, all of the content of the mind and the conditioning and the habitual ways of thinking fall away. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Mani Padme Hum, Om 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 Mani. Om Mani Padme Hum. money pay me. So, of course, the Buddhism was the practice that we call Buddhism started in pre-industrial times, and the sanghas spent a lot of time outside under the stars and in forests, in meadows. I imagine a lot of the meditations happened outside, and a lot of the walking happened in the elements, and I think for sure informed the practice. And the story the Buddha's awakening is a great story of nature, the natural world, where he's sitting under a tree, the Bodhi tree. At the moment that he is awakened, he has actually, right beforehand, he touches the earth. Now he, as his witness, Joanna Macy has beautiful teachings about this and how it's very much, the kind of, in the sense that this awakened spirit, this awakened reality is not separate from materiality, from the earth itself, and the sacredness of this existence. Just a couple of quotes here. I mentioned Walt Whitman. Many people say that Whitman and Thoreau and Emerson were some of the first Westerners who were integrating Dharmic thinking into their work. I can find it. From I Sing the Body Electric, he writes, "As I see my soul reflected in nature, as I see through a mist, one with inexpressible completeness, sanity, beauty." And then the first lines of Leaves of Grass, "I celebrate myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf in my ease, at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. Houses and rooms are full of perfumes. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it and like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The atmosphere is not a perfume. It has no taste of the distillation. It is odorless. It is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it. I will go to the bank by the wood and become undisguised and naked. I am mad for it to be in contact with me." This great teaching of interbeingness. And I love the part about loafing. I loaf and laze, bite my soul. So, you know, the great teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, they also say is a real nature mystic. You know his poetry. It's all about sunflowers and rain and lakes. And so there's this beautiful, these words that he wrote that my friend and your friend, and a friend to many of you, Betsy Rose, put to music. And it's really a form of meditating and inviting in qualities of the natural world that he you know, creates as this beautiful teaching. So I'll teach it to you line by line. Some of you know this. And I want to sing it partly because Thich Nhat Hanh has been, you know, recovering from being in a coma. And I think he's come through that, and he's back at Plum Village and speaking. And you know, he's been a great teacher to so many of us. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. I am blooming like a flower. I am blooming like a flower. I am fresh as the dew. I am fresh as the dew. I am solid as a mountain. I am solid as a mountain. I am firm as the earth. I am firm as the earth. I am free. 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 Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in. I'm water reflecting. I am water reflecting. We what is real, what is true, what is real, what is true. And I feel there's space, and I feel there is space deep inside of me, deep inside of me. I am free, I am free, I am free. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. I'm blooming, I am blooming like a flower fresh. I am fresh as the dew, solid. I am solid as a mountain, firm. I am firm as the earth. I am free, I am free, I am free. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. I'm water, I am water. What is real? What is true? I feel there's space, and I feel there is space deep inside of me. I am free, 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 I am free. So often in the teachings you hear things, you hear references to desire and the sort of extinguishing of desire. And the way I experience that is not so much as a kind of asceticism that is turning on the world or on the body, but the emergence of a state of being where what is enough. And we all know that when that happens, you know, sometimes through our practice, we go on a retreat, or sometimes we have the experience through a life, a moment in our lives, the death of someone, birth of a child, and all of that wanting of everything to be different just subsides. We live in a culture that's constantly telling us we need more. We need something bigger and shinier. We need to be different. We need to look different. We need to stay young. Good luck. This is constant. It's very hard to not get caught up in the wheel of that yearning and kind of getting caught on the wheel of wanting things to change. And this is about the moment when that can release. I've been to the desert, rode camels in the sand, hitchhiked across the border, Pass through cities and towns with just a wave of my hand. Walk through forests so young. Sat in temples so old. I've howled at the moon, swung on the stars, been offered silver and gold. There comes a moment like this. There's nothing more I require. I've got everything I need, and there's nothing else to be. It's the end of desire. The end of desire. It's high as a mountain. It's deep as the sea. It's wide as a valley. It's full and it's empty. It's everything I want. When my wanting retires, it's all that begins at the end of desire, the end of desire. This push and this pull, this kick and this shove, this hoping and dreaming, this planning and scheming for the thing we call love. If I said that wasn't me, know that I would be a liar. But there's a moment one day when there's nothing else to say. It's the end of desire. The end of desire. It's high as a mountain. It's deep as the sea. It's wide as a valley. It's full and it's empty. It's everything I want. When my wanting retires, it's all that begins at the end of desire. The end of Wow. The Great Symphony. I have one. We're going to finish with a piece, but we have maybe 5 minutes. If anyone has anything they want to share or to ask, feel free. We have a microphone here somewhere. How does this work? Is there somebody who's going to hand this? Oh, good. Thank you. Don't be shy.
Hi, my name's Paul. I guess I've been working with desire lately, and what I'm wondering is it aversion to always keep myself from going after that desire?
You know, I think a question like that can only be known from the inside. Because, you know, it's such a subtle thing, right? I mean, what is... you know, there's so much that could be to unpack that, right? You know, what it is that one is desiring and how that's affecting our well-being. I would ask the question, what is serving my deepest well-being? And to try to look deeply into that, you know? And then I think those things become clearer. Because it's not really like a moral question, like that's, you know, you should or should not do something, I don't think. It's more about really being able to kind of see into the cause and effect of things. And, you know, sort of wake up to it for yourself, for ourselves. And I don't think it's an easy thing to sort out, but I do think after a while, and I think the practice is part of it because you gain clarity and you can start seeing, how did I feel after that? After going for that? Did that actually serve me? You know? And I think there's a wisdom that can arise.
Thank you.
If there's time or the spirit moves you, yeah, my favorite song of yours is about gratitude, Nico's song.
You're requesting?
No one else.
Well, I don't think there's time for that, Mark, but... I promise I'll play it for you the next time I see you. Anybody with a burning anything? Otherwise, we'll... Yeah, sure. Thank you. It's a two-way thing, and what a great, you know, I feel so blessed to be able to share music in contexts like this, because I feel like we all are coming here, to, you know, to discover ourselves, to wake up, to find more happiness, more kindness, and I just to be able to step into a room with you, and we're all focusing on that together. What could be better, you know? And then to be able to share the music. So I feel very lucky, very honored. So instead of doing the traditional chant that's normally done here, I'd like to offer this loving kindness chant. I had so many more poems and all kinds of things to say, but next time. I will be on Saturday, I'll be at Spirit Rock, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, with Mark Coleman, great teacher. And his whole work is around awakening in the natural world. So we're going to spend the day on the land. And we're going to do practice and sing outside. We've always wanted to work together. It's our first chance to teach together. And then in August, I'll be at Vallecito's retreat center in the mountains of New Mexico, and we'll be practicing under the ponderosa pine while the wild horses run by in the woods. But, you know, those are also exceptional places, even Spirit Rock, and I know that even in times where I've fallen ill, that you can access the natural world as a healer from your bedroom through the window, you know. And people in prison know this. People have relationships to trees and to sky and cloud, and the smallest of things can become a great teacher and is still, you know, alive with all of the, I think, beauty that that you can find if you go to these amazing places. So it's everywhere. Okay. I cannot turn my eyes. I cannot count the cost of all that has been broken, all that has been lost. I cannot understand the suffering that life brings, war and hate and hunger, and a million other things. When I've done all that I can, and I try to do my part, let sorrow be the doorway into an open heart, and the light on the hills is full of mercy. The wind in the trees, it comes to save me. This silence, it will never desert me. I long to hold the whole world in these arms. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings everywhere be free. Be happy, yeah. May all beings be free from suffering and all of the causes of suffering. Thank you all for coming tonight. Hope to see you somewhere else. You can sign my mailing list if you're interested in events, and I won't send you many things, no crazy cat videos or anything like that. And be well, and I will see you somewhere else, and drive home safely.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.